Hello, everybody. We're going ahead and get started. I know you're all very excited. We're excited too. For those of you who don't know me, my name is Pam Popper, and you are at Wellness Forum Health, my company's site. And I'm also the co-founder of MakeAmericansFreeAgain.com. Thank you. So very excited about today. It's my job to introduce Tom. He's going to spend most of the time talking to you, and I'll just sit down and listen too. But just to tell you a little bit about how we got together and started working together. Back in March, I started talking about this, and I became pretty convinced by the end of May that they're never going to stop this stuff unless we make them stop, right? And I have to share with you the latest from our emperor's office yesterday. And this is, it would be funny if it weren't serious, but, you know, we've been doing all this nonsense with the masks and everything because there are so many cases, right? You know what the problem is now? There are not enough cases. And because so few people in Ohio have tested positive, we're going to have to do this for years. That's, he actually said that out loud, okay? So I guess when you're making stuff up, you have a lot of latitude to make stuff up. I don't know how else to explain it, but I mean, we really are dealing with people who are completely out of their mind at this point in time. So I guess I could never have predicted that they would go off the rails like they have, but I certainly knew that we were never going to get them to give it up back in June. So we started this organization called Make Americans Free Again. And the goal was to do something in the long term, which is to deal with this vaccine mandate issue, which has been the bane of our existence for a long time. But then in the short term, to deal with the nonsense that we're dealing with, which is we need to get our freedom back. We also need to examine some constitutional issues, like what is an emergency and some things of that nature. And homeschooling kids. I'll tell you, one of the greatest things I've ever seen is how many people are pulling their children out of public education right now. Yeah, and we've helped thousands of families do that. And we've been talking about education reform since I've been an adult. Has anybody seen any reform? I see it now. Okay, so maybe this is the reason we had to, it's called take them out, right? That's the best reform ever. So one of the things that I figured out early on also is we were going to probably have to file a lawsuit. And I started talking to some trial attorneys I know who really weren't in a position to take this on. But one of the things we talked about is that so many of the lawsuits being filed really weren't the right kind of lawsuits, right? And that's why so many of them have failed, and it's demoralizing. So I was talking with a good friend of mine in Florida, a guy who became a good friend through this whole thing. And we were saying, you know what? We need to file a lawsuit that says this is a hoax. Okay. And we had a long talk about this one night. And of course, the key is finding somebody who would file that lawsuit. So something that you don't know about me, if you don't know me well, is that I always get what I want. All right. And part of the secret to getting what you want is never asking for something that isn't good, right? So anyway, I'm thinking about, we got to file this lawsuit. We just got to find an attorney. So long story short, one Saturday, a guy by the name of Jason Hedges calls me, school psychologist, and he had started this group called Stand Up, is it? Ohio Stands Up. I always get it mixed up. Ohio Stands Up. And he said, I just cannot sit by and watch this happen. I mean, I'm just devastated at what's going on in my state and my country. And he told me he had found the perfect lawyer to do this. And he was talking about the kind of lawsuit that we're going to talk about today. And I don't know if you remember, but that day you and I exchanged a couple text messages, and we were on the phone Saturday night until, I don't know, 10 o'clock at night talking about this. And that's how we ended up here today. And it really does take a combination of the right people, the right attorney, the right legal argument. And we have all of that going on right now. And it is exciting because people all over the country are interested in what we're doing. And every day, every minute, somebody's emailing me and going, this is the way it should have. No wonder we're losing all this stuff. This is the lawsuit that should have been filed. This is the lawsuit that should have been filed. And now it's been filed, and we want to do it in other states and that sort of thing at some point in time. But it's starting here, and this is the guy who made it happen. It's my privilege to introduce Tom Renz.
Well, thank you all. I don't know if I was the right lawyer or the only lawyer that would do it. By default, they were kind of left with me. maybe I'm just crazy enough to take it on. I'm going to start out and I'm going to share with you guys something that was probably one of the more offensive things I've heard recently. I had the pleasure chatting with the state's attorney, and he'd suggested that we were just doing this for publicity. I told him, I said, my mom's in nursing home jail. My kids have to wear a mask to go to school. My constitutional freedoms have been stomped on. They've been thrown right out the window. The idea that we even have a constitution or constitutional freedoms is actually questionable at this point under this emergency declaration. Thank God we have courts. It's a shame that we have to get that far. But for the state's attorney, an attorney, right? Someone who studied the law, someone who has done their homework and theoretically, and you know, looked at the Constitution once or twice, to suggest that this would be about anything other than the fact that we have all, and I am certain every single one of you have had to deal with some loss because we were all locked in our houses for a couple weeks a while back. By the way, take a look at the Ohio Revised Code if you're really bored. Put the shelter in place order right up next to the Ohio Revised Code definition of house arrest. You'll see some similarities there. So, you know, without due process, without any real justification whatsoever, other than we need to trust Governor Jesus, we were told that we need to be locked into our houses for a couple weeks and, you know, just trust him. Well, fast forward 6 months later, we're still supposed to just trust him. None of you have died. I've noticed this. I don't see any dead people in the audience. Now, despite the fact that we were told everybody was going to die or be sick or, you know, whatever, there was this curve coming that was going to ruin us all. Okay, so we got a new virus, in theory. There's this curve coming. We need to lock down because if we don't, we've got this crisis coming. Our healthcare system's going to be overrun. We're going to be doomed. I mean, we're going to have people dying in the streets. If I don't know if you remember, there was that press outlet in New York City that videoed themselves in front of the graveyard, and they're talking about all the deaths. It later came out that the graveyard they videoed themselves in front of with the mass graves that they were talking about is the mass grave that they use in New York and have been using forever for any unnamed person that dies in the streets.
Oh my.
So this curve didn't actually come. We expanded our capacity. We had the IX Center up in Cleveland, and we had a bunch of different places and things that they did in Ohio to expand capacity, right? So that we could handle this huge influx of death and destruction that was imminent. It didn't happen. Not a single person ever got shipped there. And we tore it all down, right? It's not there anymore. Now, I'm a country lawyer, I guess. No one particularly, I'm not overly brilliant or anything by any means, but the Constitution, something that I think is pretty important, and we have certain things that are called fundamental rights that exist from the Constitution. Those fundamental rights are things that the courts have decided over the years, are things that really, those are things we got to protect, right? Right? I mean, these are things you don't just give away. And, you know, for anyone that's paid attention, it's always been clear that a crisis doesn't mean we throw our Constitution away. It's during a crisis that our Constitution becomes the most important, right? Because without it, all we have is a crisis to lead to a dictatorship. Socialism, communism, pick your ism, your totalitarianism, your nightmare. This, you know, our founding fathers came from a place where, you know, they were under a monarchy, and they didn't want us going back that way. So they wanted to make sure that Constitution was most important when things were worst. So we've kind of blown that all off, honestly. That's passé. At least in Ohio and, you know, many of the other states, that we've decided that if we have a health emergency, especially one this serious, Constitution, well, it was neat 200 plus years ago, but now we've moved on, right? We're more advanced than that. Except I don't think we are. I don't think that we've advanced beyond our Constitution. I think that we live in the greatest country in the world, as demonstrated by the fact that some random guy from a little town in Ohio is causing this kind of a stink. Me and my co-counsel, we're raising all sorts of stink. It's amazing how many people are calling us. We got people calling us from other countries. We got people calling. We've talked to every state in the union 10 times. I can't thank Pam enough. I don't know where she is hiding. She's somewhere around here. But, you know, Pam is one of the first people that really came on board to support us. Now, I was privileged. She's right about the right people, right place, right time. I got a great group of clients. They are wonderful people. But I told them at the beginning, I said, listen, and this goes to what that attorney said to me the other day. You know, why are we talking in public? Why are we sharing this publicly, right? Well, for the last 6 months plus, we sat and listened to Mike DeWine sit and lie to us on the TV. Now, I'm going to tell you something. I don't think I'm the smartest guy in the room. So if that's the case, please tell me how it is that a guy like me, as country lawyer like me, can look at these numbers, can look at these facts, and see that what he was saying wasn't true. So I want to know, is Mike DeWine, are his advisors, are they dumber than even me? Or are they just liars? Because it's one of the true, right? I mean, they're either lying or they're dumb. And neither one is a great thing. I mean, in either event, you know, what's worse is, you know, they've politicized freedom. Right, left, I don't care. This is our Constitution. This is our freedom, you know. Now, it's interesting the way that they did this, and particularly in Ohio, where you have a Republican government, right? So we got a Republican government. Now, we allowed looting, we allowed riots, but we closed churches. Now, that doesn't seem like something you would expect from a Republican government. Based on the way this was politicized, that it's these crazy right-wingers that don't want to wear masks and they're just nuts, well, that doesn't really seem to make sense here in Ohio. What are we doing, right? Well, here's the thing. Left, right, middle, doesn't matter. Freedom's freedom. I support the protesters, not looters, not rioters, but I support protesters having the right to do what they do. That's First Amendment. I mean, and listen, if it's good for the goose, it's good for the gander. You want to protest, you want to stand out, you want to exercise your rights responsibly, good for you. But why would we allow assembly for a protest, but not assembly for prayer? I don't understand that. Is this germ that smart? I mean, we've got a really, really intelligent disease here, right? I mean, this disease, it knows that these people are exercising a free speech and freedom of assembly, so that's fine. But if you're doing freedom of religion, this germ knows it, and sorry, you're done. You're done. I also noticed that with these protests and stuff, we'd never heard about, you know, 90% of the protesters dying from COVID. You would have thought the protests would have ended real quick if these guys were out there protesting without masks and you know, they're all going to die from COVID, right? Except they didn't at all. But yet we continued the lockdown. We continued, you know, throwing out random orders, destroying businesses. You know, the other thing is, you know, going back to how smart this disease is, if you go into a local store, this disease is going to kill you. But if you go into Walmart with 1,000 other people, well, you know, don't worry. We've got lines on the floor telling you which way to walk down the aisle, so we're safe. Okay? So, smart disease, really smart disease. Now, this is the backdrop, right? So we file this case, and everybody wants to know about the case. Okay, well, I'll put you to sleep if I get into too many details. So I'm going to try and give you a high-level view. If you're really bored, or if you're a really boring person, or if you have insomnia, it's online. You can print it out and you can read it. I suggest that you do it when you have a good 12 hours to sleep after you start, because it will take care of that. So we filed a case, and I've been told more than once that it was unorthodox. I was aware of that. My response is this: when was the last time we threw the Constitution out the window in the United States? To my knowledge, and I've done some homework on this, we have never in the history of our country tried to just absolutely throw the Constitution out the window like this. It's never happened. Even after World War II, during World War II, Great Depression, and we had the Korematsu case, we had all sorts of bad things happening, but never to this extent. A statewide lockdown house arrest, that's mind-blowing. That's just so far beyond the scope. You can't make the decision if your grandma's in hospice. She can't make the decision to say goodbye to your grandpa. That's sick. What kind of a monster makes rules like this? He's down the street if you're looking. And then even when it's brought to his attention, maybe he did it. Let's give him the benefit of the doubt and say he did it with good intentions. Well, we're 6 months down the road. Maybe you haven't heard, but the data has shown that everything that you said was not true. Why are you still doing it? Why are we still keeping families apart? Why are we still scaring children? We know that the odds of a child getting, sharing, or dying from this disease are basically zero. I mean, it's so low. I mean, we're talking lottery low. It just doesn't happen, you know? So we've had two cases as of the last time I looked in the state of deaths under 20 years old. They were both 19 years old, and they were both full of, I mean, they were not healthy people. Not one kid under 19 has died in the state as of last time I looked. Not one. We declared an emergency and did this lockdown. We did this with three cases. Three cases. That's an emergency? I don't get it. But you know, with emergency comes different things. In this case, one of the things that comes is a lot of money. You know, we passed some federal bills. There's a lot of money comes in once you've got a COVID emergency, isn't there? You can do some homework on that. You'll see how the money flows. And it's not just money for a doctor or for the, you know, it's for government entities. You know, all these different things that are related to the government, you know, hospital systems. What's that? Yeah, they're everywhere.
Kickbacks to the governor?
Well, I didn't say that. We don't do anything corrupt in Ohio. There was no nothing to do with this utility bill or anything. We don't want to get into that. Ohio's clean as the wind-driven snow. We're going to stay away from that. And I'm certainly not making any allegations for the camera. I'm certain everybody is clean and pure as the wind-driven snow. So there's certainly a financial incentive here. And interestingly enough, you know, when we look at those financial incentives, one of the big ones is, so you got all these groups that are out there testing for this disease and researching this disease, right? First thing that happened after this really kind of breaks is we've got an $8 billion bill passed for what to do going to the CDC. Now, the CDC's been there a long time. You'd think that they'd already had a plan or two in place, which in fact they did, to deal with the disease. In fact, there's evidence that they might have had a good idea that there might be a disease like this coming out. We'll talk about that later. That said, give them $8 billion, do you think they're going to come back and say, hey, don't worry about it, nothing to see here, right? Here, guys, $8 billion, do what you need to deal with this crisis. It's a crisis, we know it. You just tell us what you need. Here's $8 billion to get started. Does anybody on the planet think that when you do that, they're going to come back and say, no problem, nothing to see here, we don't view this as an issue, just, don't worry about it. Of course not. That's the dumbest thing I've ever heard. Again, I may be a country lawyer, but I wasn't born yesterday. So give $8 billion to the CDC. I don't know how much we've given to the companies that are doing tests. A lot. Awful lot. Mm-hmm. But if they find out that the tests are all coming back negative, they find out this isn't a big deal, you think they're going to keep getting money for tests? Nope. So I'm not saying there's an incentive there. I'm not accusing anybody of doing anything illicit or wrong yet. We'll see what discovery shows. But I would think there's an awful big incentive to find positive cases. And I would say that's probably pretty easy to do since, you know, I don't know if you guys know this, but there is no standard defined by the CDC for a positive case. So if you want to know what it means to have this disease, well, I guess ask whatever company's making the kit, the test kit, right? Mm-hmm. There's over 100 different companies making test kits for this. These companies are the ones setting the standards for what it means to be a positive or a negative. Now, not accusing anyone of anything again, but if you were getting paid a lot of money to find this disease, and you knew that money was going to dry up real quick if you weren't finding it, would you want to make sure that test is pretty sensitive? I would. Actually, I wouldn't, but I'm kind of an ethical guy. It's probably why I'm not richer. It's also probably why I'm a country lawyer. So we've got a lot of incentive to find this and a lot of nonsense. Our case is calling them out on a lot of this. One thing I think is really interesting. What are we up to, 97 million deaths from this? I think half the country's dead. It keeps going up. I think we're rising. Yeah, for the camera's sake, I can say 97 million because I'm sure by the time people see this in 2 to 3 days, we'll be there. I think it's actually closer to 200,000 at the moment, but 200,000 deaths, right? It's a lot of people. I mean, I'm of the opinion life's precious and one death is too many. I really value life. I think it's a critical thing and something that we need to protect. But 200,000, right, out of our 320+ million people, we've shut down the country and we've thrown our Constitution out for those 200,000. Except for one thing. Is it 200,000? I'd say not. Why would I say not? Well, because I'm a crazy conspiracy theorist and I've got a tinfoil hat at home to keep the aliens out of my head. Right? Well, maybe not. Maybe not. Maybe it's because I read the CDC's guidance on this. In 2003, we had the last major revision to the Coroner's Handbook. Coroner's Handbook is the book that, you know, pretty much decides how you list how someone dies on their death certificate and, you know, the stuff related to that. Right? We've made one major change since then. You know what that major change was? That was how we account for COVID deaths. It's the only disease that we account for in this way. It's kind of odd, isn't it? I'm sure it has nothing to do with any money or anything else. I'm sure that we just did that because it was good science, right? No, well, wait. Actually, it isn't good science. I'll tell you, it's so bad, the science is so bad, and the approach to this is so bad, that I personally believe that it is actually worse than the approach used by the World Health Organization. That's saying something. The World Health Organization has a crew that puts out these disease codes, right? They put out these disease codes and they label these diseases. And the reason that they do that is because we have this field of study. It's called epidemiology. It's a study. They study these diseases. They determine what's happening. A lot of math. A lot of application of math because it's science, right? You know, we follow the science. That's what Mike keeps telling us. We're following the science here, except we're not. Well, the science of epidemiology is really very math-based, right? So there's got to be standards. We've got to follow these standards. And we want to know and be able to analyze and learn and understand what's happening with any given disease. So this group from the World Health Organization puts out these codes, and usually everybody generally agrees to them, and everybody generally follows them to some extent or another. And with COVID, the World Health Organization put out two codes. And it did this for a very good reason. The two codes were U071 and U072. The reason for that, and maybe a 701 and 002, I get them mixed up a little bit. But the reason that they did that was one of them was for a confirmed COVID death. The other was for a probable COVID death. Now, if you're studying this disease, that makes good sense. I mean, you would want to know, if you're trying to figure out how dangerous this disease is, really, how many times do we know that you died from COVID and how many times we think you might have died from COVID? That's a pretty important difference, right? Well, not too important, at least. And by the way, if you're dealing with people, you got a new disease coming out and you got people in, you know, an undeveloped nation or a nation where there's no healthcare infrastructure, pick your third world nation. That's really important because you aren't going to have access to the same quality testing and materials that you would have in the United States or Europe or wherever, right? So you have these two different codes because then a doctor can look at you and say, well, you got these symptoms. It looks like this disease. It's probably this disease. I can give you this diagnosis, but it's probable because I can't confirm it, right? Not in the United States. Apparently, we aren't quite as... We're back to the third world, I guess, at least in the opinion of the CDC. So they combined them all. Whether you're probable or confirmed, you're still confirmed in the United States for death purposes, at least for counting purposes. You also don't really have to die from COVID to die from COVID. Did you know that? That 200,000 number? Well, that's not really all that important. I'll tell you why. So I'm a conspiracy theorist again, except for when it's no longer theory, it's fact. And so I don't know what that makes me. But we had the director of public health for the state of Illinois slip up and tell the truth. We got a quote from Dr. Birx that was similar. And, you know, they said that number... That number is with, not from, right? So let me put this in perspective, right? If you have, and this is using CDC guidance, right? And I'm pulling this right from there, and I've said it enough that I can actually remember it, okay? If you live in an area with continuous ongoing transmission of SARS-CoV-19, or COVID-2, which is the virus that they... claim causes COVID-19. COVID-19 is the disease. So if you live in an area with continuous ongoing transmission, which is at this point everywhere in the country almost, okay, you live in one of those areas and you cough when you die or you got a cough, well, that's enough to give you to be a probable case, right? If you die with that, well, probable and confirmed are combined, right? Well, and then if you've got a death certificate that says it's confirmed, well, then you've got a confirmed case. Now, whether or not they're counting it twice, I don't know on the case count. We'd love to see in discovery if that's happened. Hopefully we'll find out. Oddly enough, the state's attorney said that deaths and cases were irrelevant to our case. I was pretty sure that our case was really asking about the relevance of the data and whether or not, you know, there was any sort of a constitutional basis for them to make these decisions. And we can debate about what level of scrutiny and, you know, what sort of tests are going into this, but I would think that since we had alleged that the data was either misleading or wrong, that the data would be relevant, but maybe I'm wrong. Like I said, simple country lawyer, I'm not as smart as a state's attorney, so we'll go with this. But yeah, so that's with, not from. So if you live in that area, right? You live in one of those areas, continuous ongoing transmission, SARS-CoV-2. You cough when you die. It's a probable case, right? Now, granted, it's been some of the states have changed their rules since this originally came out. You cough when you die, but let's say you get hit by a bus and you cough when you die. Well, guess what? under those rules, you could technically still be listed as a COVID case, right? I mean, because it doesn't say that you have to die from COVID. It just says you got to have with, right? So that 200,000 number or 97 million, whatever it is, well, that's with, not from. It seems a little misleading to me, right? Because when you think we've got 200,000 COVID deaths, you'd think that was people died from COVID. You don't think, well, they might have had COVID, but they got hit by a bus, right? I've got some great stories on this. There's a story about a guy who decided to commit suicide by cop in New York City. I think it's New York City. Maybe I got that wrong. I'm not including it in the case right now, but it was an interesting news story. He decided to commit suicide by cop. Cops show up. He says, "I'm committing suicide by cop." He had a knife in one hand, a gun in another, charged the cops. He was successful. He was a COVID death. Because guess what? Apparently he had whatever they felt necessary to call him a COVID case at the end, even though he was shot, you know, however many times. I saw another story about a guy got hit by lightning and fell off his roof. Another COVID death. Now, granted, these are extreme. You know, we only hear in the news about the extreme cases, and I'm sure that's not the normal. And I would hope that that we haven't gone that far across the board. But the point is 200,000 is not 200,000 people who died because they had COVID. 200,000 is how many people who might have had COVID when they died. That's a huge difference, right? So why wouldn't they give us the with? Why would you change those numbers? Why would you change the way that this disease is accounted for as compared to any other disease in the country? I don't know. I'd love to find out in discovery. Hopefully we will. I think that's an interesting thing and certainly is relevant. So yeah, I'd love to know. I would also love to know that, you know, if a guy like me can figure this out, because I actually read the stuff. I mean, that's all I had to do, right? I just had to read. I mean, we learned how to do that, even in our schools. Now, I went to a great school. I love my school. But are these guys not reading? Is the state not reading? Am I the only guy that read this? And you know, wouldn't you, if you're going to throw our Constitution out the window, wouldn't you at least look into this before you do so? I mean, I call me silly, but Mike DeWine was an attorney general of the state of Ohio, right? He was an attorney. I'm guessing he's read the Constitution. I'm guessing he's heard of that document at least. Did he really think that a six-month emergency in which he just absolutely threw out even rights? So when the courts look at rights, they evaluate them under certain standards, right? The highest standard is what's called strict scrutiny. Basically, it's tough to ever get rid of a right that is reviewed under strict scrutiny, ever for any reason. Well, we threw a bunch of them out the window. Threw a bunch of intermediate scrutiny rights out the window. For very long time, in my opinion. What was the reason? I mean, because some people might have died? How many people died fighting for the freedom of our nation? How many soldiers have died fighting for our nation? If the price of freedom is eternal vigilance, many soldiers, many American heroes have died paying that price, remaining vigilant, protecting our nation. You know, they've laid down their lives, more than 40,000, more than 100,000, more than 200,000. A lot of people die for our freedoms. We're going to throw it out for this? We're going to throw it out the window? Tests. So when we started to see the case fatality rate, mortality rates dropping, right? So we didn't, you know, this emergency thing, you know, we got to keep it going. It's important. It's keeping us all safe. You know, when we started out, it was because we're all going to die and we got to flatten this curve, except for no one was dying, right? So ever so subtly, we quit talking about deaths because, you know, people started to wise up and figure out that First of all, you're not telling us how many people actually died from COVID, just making some random numbers up, and we're moving from there. So the death number wasn't very well supported and was starting to get hit here and there in the press, and people were talking about it. So we got to move on to something else, right? This is because we need this emergency, right? We're not keeping people safe if we don't have an emergency declaration. So what are we going to do? We got to justify this. Well, let's move on. Deaths don't matter anymore because not enough people are dying. Call me silly. I think that means that there's not an emergency, but whatever. So we move on to cases, right? Cases. We got too many cases out here. Can't have all these cases. I mean, these cases could lead to people being sick. I'm a dad. I got two kids. Basically, from November till March or April, they're sick the whole time. I mean, if there's not a snotty nose in my family, there's something wrong. And then once we get to March or April, we've got snotty noses from allergies. So, I mean, I don't know. See, a sickness just seems to be something that we should live with. I guess not anymore, though. So we move on to cases. Well, here's the thing about cases. If we got a case, it means we must have a way of determining that there is a case, right? Except we don't. But wait. There's this gold standard test, right? I know it's out there because I heard Governor DeWine talking about it. And it was gold standard stuff. This is beautiful. This test is perfect. And it works so well that he had COVID before he didn't. Well, let me tell you about the test. I have in the complaint included language from one of the test kits that says, no virus isolate was available when we were creating this kit. So we put some stuff together and we thought that'd be good enough. I mean, I'm paraphrasing here, but that's pretty much what it said. We also have no, like I said earlier, no CDC defined definition for what a case of COVID-19 is. We have a symptom definition for the disease based on symptoms, but in terms of what's a test got to do to give you a diagnosis, well, that's up to the manufacturers, right? So manufacturers are doing this PCR test. The guy who invented the PCR test was a smart individual, right? This person was a smart individual, and this person said, this is a great test for laboratory use. Shouldn't be used for diagnosis of a disease, though. It's too sensitive. But that's our gold standard. Remember when the news media was beating Trump up because there weren't enough tests? Well, there still aren't enough tests, at least not that work. I don't know if that's Trump's fault. I would say that, these brilliant doctors who were telling us how to handle this should have probably came up with a test that was effective by now. This test looks for pieces of a virus, the SARS-CoV-2 virus. Now, depends on which scientist you talk to as to some of the specifics of the way that this test works. A lot of them just think the whole test is garbage from beginning to end. But what we all can agree on is that this looks for pieces of SARS-CoV-2. Well, a piece of SARS-CoV-2 that's found on this test does not mean that you have COVID-19. Okay? Now, there are people who support this, and I get emails about this, and you got to understand something. I'm not a doctor, just a regular guy. This information is given to me and shared with me from my doctors, my experts, my friends who are helping me with this. Lots of smart people, lots of them. Way smarter than I'll ever be. So I'm going to share some of this. Now, I know that there are a group of people out there that has certain views about germ theory, things like that. I'm not going to get into that debate because it's not relevant for my case. The bottom line is this. What we can all agree on is that the government has said that SARS-CoV-2 causes COVID-19. This test detects pieces of SARS-CoV-2. This test being these tests, because there's lots of them and they're all somewhat random. they check for the presence of this disease. They don't check for how much of this disease is in your system necessarily. And I guess that's pretty important for the doctor type people, right? Because you gotta have some, there's something called viral load. A piece of a disease does not make you sick. A piece of a virus does not make you sick. We got an immune system, right? And they usually deal with that. But you know, this detects whether there's anything in there. So it doesn't matter whether you're contagious or not. It doesn't show that. It doesn't demonstrate that. It doesn't demonstrate whether you're going to be sick. It just demonstrates that there's a piece of a virus that got into your system. That's the gold standard, right? That's the best we've got 6 months down the line. And that's what we moved on to as a justification to have our rights thrown right out the window. That is also why our kindergartners and preschoolers are being forced to wear a mask in school. If you guys have kids in schools that aren't subject to that, good luck. I appreciate that. Good for you. Most of them are. By the way, it's not just kids that are basically not dying from this at all. Essentially, anyone under 60, 65, you really have nothing to worry about, unless you are, you know, already a sick individual, have some serious issues. Now, I want to make clear, we do believe this is a disease. We do believe it's killed people. And while I'm making some jokes here and there, we do believe that every life is precious and, you know, we don't want anyone to get sick or die. But that's not the point of this case, is it? Point of this case is, are we going to ever eradicate any and all illness from our lives? Are we going to ever eradicate any and all risk from our lives? No. No. So that means, should we throw our Constitution out because there's risk? Now, right now, based on the precedent we're setting, or the precedent that Mike DeWine and many other governors are trying to set, we should be able to declare a public health emergency over heart disease because that kills a lot more people than COVID has. And I think that that means we need to immediately shut down every McDonald's in the country. And everybody should be forced by executive fiat to run a mile or two every day. How do you feel about that? That's it. That's the case, right? I mean, that's what we're saying. We're saying that, really? Really? This is it? You know, we got a few people that are getting sick, a few people that are dying, and so our Constitution doesn't matter. I'm going to be honest with you. I think I put my first post on my website in March, and I believe at that point they were looking at around a 4% case fatality rate. Okay? I think that's what it was. It's been a few months, and an awful lot's happened since then. And I argued in that even if it is 4%, even if it's 10%, do we give up our Constitution for that? Now, here's the thing. If I win this, does this mean that you can't wear a mask? Nope. You're absolutely welcome. I support your right to wear a mask. I support your right to stay home. I support your right to lock yourself in the house, to put HEPA filters everywhere, to, you know, Lysol yourself and everyone around you every time you see them, and to avoid everyone and all people in your life and whatever. That's what you want to do, you go ahead and do it. Don't tell me I do. If I want to take that risk, that's my decision. Now, it's amazing because we've seen pretty strong indication that the state's position on this is going to be to really push the procedural issues. They don't want to go to court on this. Naturally, they don't want to go to court. I think it's because they don't have a case. That's my opinion, but you know, we'll see. So they're gonna push procedural issues, try to get us thrown out of court for nonsense. I asked an interesting question that I didn't get a very good answer to, and I'm gonna publicly ask it here again. I've alleged that this data is misleading. Okay, I've alleged that the data is either incorrect, misleading, or maybe it's intentionally misleading. I don't know. We'll see. I haven't alleged that it's intentionally misleading. Kind of did, but you know, if I'm wrong about this, there's a real, real simple thing that we can do. Because I'm a pain in the butt right now, right? You get this crazy guy from Nowheresville, Ohio. It's raising a stink. I got people that are actually listening to me. I don't know what that says about you all, but no offense. But you all are listening to this crazy guy. I'm somehow getting a platform. Look at my face. No one wants to see this. For me to get a platform, there's something going on, right? So there is a real easy way to make me go away and to embarrass me. And I'll tell you, I said this on several interviews. If the state wants to release all the information, if the CDC wants to release all the information and let us have it analyzed independently by people who don't have a huge monetary stake in this or any other stake, you know, people that are independent. If we find out we're wrong, that Mike DeWine and his crew have saved our lives, I'm going to make a public apology and I'm going to go away and you all are going to be like, this guy's an idiot, right? I mean, that's what's going to happen. So my question and my challenge to the CDC, to the state, and to anyone else is, if you don't have anything to hide, why are you hiding it? Let us see it. Let us see the data. There's no reason to hide it. This is a real simple thing. You have said that something is happening that is so serious that you can't share the data. Well, we're 6 months down the road. Let me explain this to you guys, right? So the state gets this data. And you've heard if anyone's listened to, I can't listen to them as often anymore. I get briefs. But if anybody's still listening to DeWine, you know, when he's sitting there and he's lying on the TV, a lot of times he'll bring up the fact there's a little bit of lag between the time the data comes in and the time that they get it logged, right? Well, that means it's logged, right? So let me translate this for you guys who aren't real up with it on the computer stuff. That means it's in the computer in a single place where they can work with it, which means all they have to do is click attach and send, and I can look at it. You telling me you're that busy you can't do it? How about the models, right? We got these models. They're making these decisions based on science, I would imagine. That's what they're telling us. Follow the science. I'm just following the facts, right? Okay. Share the facts. Let me see your models. Send them to me. Let's see these models that justify this behavior, that justify these actions. I want to see them because, you know what? I want to share it with some people who know how to do modeling, who understand the science behind it. I've talked to some of these guys. They're really smart. You know, this is complicated stuff. But there's good people out there. Let's look at these models. Let's look at your models. Let's see how correct they've been from the beginning. And let's see whether they're correct or not now. Why can't you share that? You have the model. It's already created. So, wait, attach, send. My email address. Yeah, my email address is available. It's not hard to find. I know because I get 90 million emails a day. And I've not been shy about sharing it, right? So this is it, right? I mean, we can make me go away. We can end these conversations. Why aren't we doing it? I think that's really the question. That's really the question. Why do you feel like we can continue to not have a constitution or act like it doesn't matter? What's the basis? What is it? And I don't know. I really don't. I don't have any idea. We filed our case. Judge indicated he wanted us to get going on discovery. We're trying to do that. The state's trying to block it, shockingly. But again, why? Why is that the tactic? Why not just embarrass me publicly in a huge way by putting this data out there that shows how dangerous this truly is? Why wouldn't you do that? I mean, it's an election season. You got the base of the Republican Party in Ohio is not happy with Mike DeWine. And Jane Timken, the head of the Ohio Republican Party, who is out there strong-arming a bunch of weak-kneed legislative people who don't have the courage to tell her where to go. Well, I mean, if I'm going to cause a problem for the party, you would think that she would alleviate that problem, right? She would say to Mike, let's you know, share this data and make these people go away. But you got to share all of it. See, what they've done is they've shared some data, but they've shared it after they've analyzed it, gone through it, and put it out their way, right? We got this wonderful COVID dashboard, which I'm sure means something to someone. Not sure what, but I'm sure it means something to someone. Now, my scientists and the people that I've talked to have kind of made a few jokes about it, and I said, well, that's not appropriate. They're just saving lives. But, you know, it means something to someone. Let's talk about what it means. Let me see the science. Let me see the data. Let me see what you're using that justifies the decisions you're making. Put that out there, make it public, embarrass me, and I can go away. I need a day off. I haven't had one since March. I mean, look at me. I'm tired. At this point, I'd almost say thank you. But they're not going to. The reason they're not going to is pretty self-explanatory, right? So I'm gonna throw this out there, and then I'm going to let you guys ask some questions, right? So we're at the discovery stage, in theory. Naturally, state doesn't believe we should ever get to discovery, so I don't know. We'll get that clarified coming up. Our next step is to try and get truth. That's what discovery is about. Okay, so I'm an old school guy in terms of the law. I believe that the law is something that should be respected. I believe that our justice system should be focusing on justice. And I think justice is about truth, right? So we have a discovery process, and that process is where we share information, because in theory, we may differ on our interpretation of the law, but as attorneys, we should all be working to get to truth, because truth means justice, and that's what's important. Okay. Ultimately, that's what, as an attorney, we should know, and I believe is central to what we're doing. And I'll tell you, it's my opinion that even if I'm representing a client, you know, my job is to zealously represent their interests, right? But I got to get to truth, right? Because we can't have justice without truth. So we want to get to truth. We want to see what's going to happen. We're challenging the emergency declaration itself. We're challenging the orders promulgated under the emergency declaration. And we did so in a very unorthodox way. But we did so following the rules. Nothing that we did was outside of the rules. Just because you don't do it the way everybody else does it doesn't mean you can't do it. It just means that it's different. But I didn't see another way to do it, right? Because how else would you do it? This has never happened. I mean, we didn't just have, this isn't like I can go to court and say, hey, this guy violated this one section of the law. Here's how he did it. Here's my explanation. Let's argue this, right? I can't do that because he threw the whole Constitution out the window. We have ignored the whole thing. So how do you deal with that? So we did our best to come up with a way. God willing, the judge will continue to entertain it. We're doing so far so good, you know, and like I said, our goal here is to get to justice because, and I asked this in the complaint, you know, if we can't go to the courts now, if the courts won't stand up and make a decision about constitutionality of these actions, you know, if you're going to say that we have to bring these allegations in a way that we would in everything else, well, then the people have no recourse at that point, right? I mean, because you can't bring this in the way that you would bring a typical action because it's not a typical action. There's nothing typical about this. So we've got to trust our judicial system to exercise its position as a co-equal branch of the government. Now, that doesn't mean that the judicial system is obligated, in my opinion, to rule my way on everything. They've got to come to justice. They've got to come to the right decision. That right decision should be determined after a true and honest evaluation of the facts and the law. So what does that mean? That means that the state of Ohio needs to give us, the CDC needs to give us, the people involved and that have relevant information for our case need to give us that relevant information. so that we can look at it, we can discuss it, and we can determine how does the law apply when these are the facts, right? This doesn't sound scary to me. Doesn't sound like I'm doing anything wrong. I've spent a lot of time thinking about the ethics of this and how to do it fairly, ethically, and honestly, and I'm trying my best. It's not to say that, you know, it's perfect. I mean, I'm just some guy from Fremont, but that's what we're trying to do. So that's where we are in the case. We'll see how it goes from here. But please, before anybody asks me, because this will be one of the first questions, what can I do? Okay? When people ask me this question, my response is always the same, and then they always look at me the same way. What can I do? Okay. Well, you're here listening to me. So either you're a glutton for punishment, or you might think that I have something valid to say. Okay? In either event, I urge you, at least look at the facts on my case, right? They're all cited. You can look them up. You can look up everything I said. And none of it, it's all CDC stuff for the most part. I mean, some of it's not. Some of it's to other scientific studies or things like that. But for the most part, my facts are what they are. I want you to learn what's happening. And I can't stress this to you enough. So why would a guy like me, I'm happy living in a quiet place, doing my thing quietly. Why would a guy like me ever decide that he's going to put his face out publicly for something, right? Why? Well, because I need you to share the truth, okay? I need you to share the truth. I told my clients when we started, I said, critical to this case, I said, because my client said, hey, we want to be free again. Okay. They said, what can you do? I said, well, let me see. I said, what we need to do is we need to do two things. We need to do the very best we can on a lawsuit, which we're trying to do. You guys are going to have to trust us to try and do our best with it. And I'll tell you that we structured it in a way where, God willing, even if I blow it, the next attorney can take our work and use it. And maybe the next guy who's better than me can do it. I'm hoping that I'm good enough to do it. I'm certainly trying. I put an awful lot of time into trying to do it and to do it well. So we'll see whether I'm good enough or not. But in any event, I'm humble enough to realize that someone can pick up the torch and run with it after me, even if I blow it. So we put a lot of science and facts together to facilitate that, right? But we're going to push forward on this case. We're going to try and win this case with everything we got. The other thing I said to him is, listen, if I win this case tomorrow, there's still 150 million plus Americans that are terrified to walk out of their house because they've been lied to for 6 months. Terrified. If I win this case tomorrow, I'm going to tell you what's going to happen. They're going to try and play it off as a political case. I don't want a political case. I want to win this on facts and using justice. I don't want a judge to decide this because it's my belief. I want facts and justice, right? Which means the state has to give me facts and then we have to try and get to justice. So while I'm doing that, we got to make people aware what's going on because there is no alternative narrative, right? You find somewhere in the press that you can find someone saying what I'm saying. It's not happening. It's just not happening. And I'll tell you, I've gotten more calls from people saying, you're the only guy saying this. More calls, more emails, more, oh my God. Thank God for Pam's help. She's helping me field and take care of some of this. And it's not that I don't want to talk to everybody. I enjoy it. But I literally, the other day, I'm cleaning out my voicemail box. And before I got halfway done, it was full again. Now, I'm taking calls from Germany, from Australia, from Canada, from you name it. And again, you got to understand, for a guy like me, I'm like, you know, what's going on here? You know, what are you doing? I'm still trying to get accustomed to the fact that people actually care what I have to say. That's especially odd. I mean, I got a wife, and you know, she listens now and then. But I mean, we know who's in charge. I mean, you know, I got a great marriage, so we know who's in charge. So I need that word spread. We've got to create that alternative narrative. And the thing that I keep getting when I say that to people is, he's just blowing me off. No. I'm not. Right now, so few people are telling the truth that it's not out there. I'm doing press because I know that if I don't, there is no alternative out there. There's nothing. I've got Mike DeWine, who sat on the TV lying every day for months. Months? How do we compete with that? Well, this is how we compete with it. We record ourselves, we go out, we do press, we try and raise awareness. So I'm doing that. And I'm spending every minute of my day, every day of the week on this case, whether it's trying to educate people about the truth or whether it's fighting this in the legal perspective. Every minute. I don't have more hours a day. There just aren't any. As Pam said, Saturday night at 10 o'clock, I'm having a party on my computer, right? Typing, reading, doing. I'm a fun guy, let me tell you. I need help. I also need you guys, particularly if you're on the R side of things, and I don't care. Like I said, I think this should happen on the D side, but you know, Joe Biden said he thinks that the whole country should wear a mask and that we should be locked down again. So yeah, you know, I don't care D or R. If Joe wants to come over to my side on this, God bless him. I don't see it happening, but if it does, great. I'm not D or R specific on this. I just know that if we go D, we definitely have been told that we're going to be all wearing a mask for a good long time. Well, at least unless we win this case constitutionally, right? So if you are on the R side, though, please, Jane Timken is the head of the Ohio Republican Party. I've been told repeatedly she's been strong-arming state legislative people into doing nothing. That's what's happening. That's why no one's done anything. I don't believe for a second that the Republican base, this state voted for Donald Trump. Majority of people in this state voted for Donald Trump. Don't tell me that that group of people is okay with what's happening. I do not believe that for a second. I spent the last 4 years hearing about those Trump voters, right? The Trump voters are a certain type, according to the news media. I don't believe they're a type that are okay with being told they have to wear a mask. You want to wear a mask, go ahead. But I have to? I don't know about that. So get your Republicans in gear. Call them. You know a donor, or if you are a donor, tell them, hey, you want my money? I better see a change of platform real quick. Real quick. You want my support? You're coming up on an election, and I'm going to tell you guys something. This is a critical time. It's October 2nd, maybe 3rd right now, right? So we have about a month where we, the voters, we, the people, have leverage. They actually care what we think kind of right now, right? I need you to share the message. I cannot stress how important that is. We have got to raise awareness. We have got to let our people know. I don't care if there's a risk of getting a disease. I want my freedoms back. There is no new normal. There is normal. We want normal, not new normal. Okay? Mike DeWine's new normal is not my new normal. Mike DeWine's new normal will never be my new normal. I get it. He had to do something when this first came out because, you know, maybe he arguably didn't know what was going to happen. Okay. It's 6 months later. You're not popular anymore. We need to make a change. So please, you want to help me. Number one thing you can do, tell people, share people. Now, let me stress, someone who is scared and wearing a mask, you tell them, hey, you're an idiot. Let me tell you what that's going to do. Nothing. You may feel some satisfaction for a minute or two, but it isn't going to change anything. We have to be respectful. We have to be polite. we have to understand that there are brilliant people who have been misled by this. In the South Bay Pentecostal versus the state of California case that was ruled on May 30th, the Chief Justice of the United States Supreme Court said that 100,000 people had died from coronavirus. And said, I believe, I'm paraphrasing, the exact language was something along the lines of a disease that has killed over 100,000 people in the U.S., okay? The Chief Justice of the United States Supreme Court was misled on the difference between with and from, okay? I got that in my complaint, which may be career suicide, we'll find out. If you guys see me under a bridge embankment, throw me $5 for a bottle of whiskey and we'll call it a day. But it's our freedom, right? So we do what we have to. God willing, we're credible. I feel very, I will tell you, I was very nervous making that statement because I have so much respect for our judicial system. And I know it's naive. A lot of us say, oh, they're all political hacks, this, that, and other. No, I don't believe that, and I mean that. I actually believe that if we do our job as lawyers well and we get to justice, even though there may be a predisposition, because everybody's got predispositions, I still believe if we do our job well as lawyers, we can get to justice. We'll find out whether I'm right coming up, because if I lose, obviously I'm not as wrong. There's no justice. If I lose, there's no justice. If someone else does, it's, you know. I'm joking. But there's some smart people that have been misled. We've got to communicate. We've got to reach out. And we've got to do so in a respectful way. We've got to help educate them. We've got to help them to understand. And it should not matter whether there is a D or an R. Because I'm going to tell you something right now. If you don't care about the freedoms you've lost now, that's fine. But the precedent we've set could allow for freedoms that you do care about to be removed in the future. Okay? So maybe you're a very, very strong D and you're okay with the masks. And you're okay that they did the lockdown. Would you be okay if they said you didn't have the right to protest? Would that be okay? Because realistically, had they had any semblance of shame, they would have said that these protests are high risk because they've shut down churches, they shut down everything. You can't have people gathering. You know, I mean, we shut down sports, everything, right? But they allowed the protests. If they had any semblance of shame, they would have said this is just absolutely not even close to equal protection of the law, and they would have said, you know, you either can do all of it or none of it. So even if you're very much of the left side of the political spectrum and believe that that's the way to go, and even if you don't mind the freedoms you've lost now, this is an American issue. This is very much an American issue. And who knows what your next governor is going to be? You know, what if he takes away something you do care about? Because right now, all we got to do is declare a public health emergency. And apparently that means we can do whatever we want because there are a lot of laws that have been violated. I get calls every day about egregious violations of things like the American with Disabilities Act, our freedoms of religion, things like that. And they say, well, they can't do that. People say this to me. And I say, you're right, they can't. Well, but they are. And I said, you're right, they are. So I urge you guys, communicate, share, educate, do it respectfully. And thank you.